Welcome to OncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. OncLive On Air is a podcast from OncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, OncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Eli Lilly, we had the pleasure of speaking with Katherine Callaghan Coombs, MD, an assistant professor of medicine in the Division of Hematology at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine and UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center, to reflect on exciting abstracts that were presented at the 2021 ASH Annual Meeting and Exposition. In our exclusive interview, Coombs discussed research that was presented at the 2021 ASH Annual Meeting and Exposition in chronic lymphocytic leukemia, including that with covalent and non-covalent BTK inhibitors, COVID-19 vaccinations, and time-limited combinations. So thank you so much for joining us again, Dr. Coombs. Before the ASH meeting, you joined us to discuss some of the abstracts that you were looking forward to hearing the results of, including some of the data on covalent and non-covalent BTK inhibitors, COVID-19 vaccinations, as well as time-limited combinations.
Yeah, that's correct. And I'm happy to reconvene following the meeting to catch up.
So how would you say that some of these data measured up to your expectations?
Well, first of all, it was just a really great meeting, different than most ASHs with limited attendance, but I thought that was still a wonderful way to reconvene it with colleagues before the Omicron peak started hitting us. So I was overall very impressed with the meeting. I thought it was done very safely and really great data with respect to the CLL presentations. So I'll go ahead and get started with the CLL13 trial, which was presented. I just have to say I was extremely impressed with the presentation and the data. I think the most meaningful takeaway from that presentation for me is that the combination of venetoclax with obinutuzumab really performs exquisitely well in a younger, fitter patient population. So the CLL14 trial was, of course, in kind of older or unfit patients. And so this trial was more focused on younger patients, fitter patients, though there were older patients allowed in on the trial. But we saw just overall excellent performance of that regimen. And they also had the triplet of obinutuzumab, ibrutinib, and venetoclax, which had really nice rates of undetectable MRD as well. Similar to what we could tell from the abstract, the venetoclax with rituximab did not have that low of rates of MRD negativity, confirming what we likely already knew, which is that there's no role for rituximab combined with venetoclax in the frontline setting. And we also saw inferior rates of undetectable MRD for the chemoimmunotherapy arms, which, you know, have largely been phased out at time of this abstract coming out based upon results from other studies that we already knew about. So the next takeaway from the meeting is that we saw back-to-back presentations looking at the non-covalent BTK inhibitors in CLL and SLL. So Anthony Mato presented the updated data of pirtobrutinib. And so the abstract actually didn't give us a lot of added insight, but mentioned that they were going to include an additional 100 or so CLL patients. And so we saw that on the day of presentation and saw that this drug continues to perform really just phenomenally, both with respect to efficacy with high overall response rates, in addition to a very low rate of severe adverse effects. And we saw very, very low rates of discontinuation due to toxicity. So I think where that drug shines is not only in its efficacy, but also its tolerability. They also included a subset analysis of patients who had been failed by a BTK inhibitor and venetoclax, which represents one of the major areas of unmet need in CLL in the current time. And this drug shows pretty remarkable efficacy in that subgroup as well. I can't remember the exact PFS, but I think it may have been, I don't know, around 16 months or so. And there was a slide on that within the presentation. So Jennifer Wojak also presented data on nemtabrutinib, is the new name for what was formerly called RQL-531 and more recently called MK-1026. And so I'll say that that drug also appears to have good activity. I think a response rate just around 60% to my memory. I will say there were less patients overall treated in that trial. I believe the efficacy numbers were only reported for 30-some CLL patients, but does appear to have activity. I would say the one factor that may not be quite as favorable when kind of looking at those presentations side by side is there was a lot higher of a proportion of patients with grade three or higher SAEs. Though I don't think there was one clear signal for, you know, the major toxicity. It seemed like that was kind of spread around among different toxicities. To pause there, the other kind of thing that I think has changed a lot since ASH is I was interested to see the COVID vaccine efficacy data. And so there were a couple of presentations on that. And, you know, it kind of mostly confirms earlier data that shows that CLL patients have quite a bit lower response to these mRNA vaccines, which, you know, we know that to be the case with other vaccines as well. Concurrent with ASH, Evusheld, which is a combination of two monoclonal antibodies produced by AstraZeneca, received emergency use authorization and is now available for our patients. And so this is, you know, a huge advance for CLL and other patients on immune suppressing therapy or with immune suppressing conditions to help with immunity to COVID in the setting of an inability to mount an adequate response to vaccination. So that's something I've been dealing with really a lot for my clinic patients. I am very eager to get them access to the drug. The tough thing is that access is somewhat limited. The doses are not widely available yet. I do hope that'll change as more time goes along. So I do think that's a new change since the last time we spoke that I'm eager to see become more of an available reality for our patients.
And we also, last time we spoke, just previewed some of the data on some of the time-limited combinations we've been seeing emerge over the past couple of years. What are your thoughts since seeing the presentations?
Yeah, so we saw updated analyses from a few different time-limited regimens, including the phase 3 GLOW trial and Captivate trial. And so these are both upfront studies looking at the combination of ibrutinib and venetoclax. So the advantage of that combo is that it's an all-oral regimen, and Captivate, the additional year of follow-up was really impressive. They actually showed no further relapses in patients in the past year. We saw a little bit more granular data with respect to rates of MRD and overall efficacy, but yeah, no relapses in another year was kind of the message that I took away, which is just really impressive. And so then we also saw more detailed data on GLOW. So that was actually a randomized trial of older or unfit patients where they were randomized to either ibrutinib and ven or chlorambucil with obinutuzumab. To no one's surprise, the ibrutinib and ven arm was significantly more efficacious. But, you know, I will say it does seem like the rates of discontinuation are a bit higher. I think it was just above 10% of patients discontinued, which to me isn't totally unexpected given that the population had likely more comorbidities. And we know in general, regimens can be more difficult to tolerate in older individuals. They saw pretty good rates of MRD. It's not an apples to apples comparison because they looked at both 10 to the minus 4 and 10 to the minus 5. And I believe the 10 to the minus 4 was around 40 some percent and 10 to the minus 5 around 50 some percent. So not quite as favorable as Captivate. But again, not an apples to apples comparison, and overall appears to be a good regimen. But you know, the other tough competitor, I think, for ibrutinib in general is we saw some really nice zanubrutinib data, and so that is the Sequoia trial, which is a complicated study where there are a number of different arms, and so we were able to see the randomized portion of VR versus zanubrutinib in the front line. This excluded 17p, and we, of course, to no one's surprise, zanubrutinib was more efficacious, but we also got a better window into the toxicity of zanubrutinib in this large study, and it continues to show very low rates of atrial fibrillation, I think on the order of 3%. And so this is the most impressive of any of the covalent BTK inhibitors, and I think is a very attractive drug should this become FDA approved in the future, which, you know, maybe we'll see in 2022. We also saw some the other subarm data for the Sequoia trial, including the zanubrutinib venetoclax combination, which, you know, also looks excellent. And I think this was actually a publication, not an ASH presentation, but recently Jake Sumerai published, think in Lancet Oncology, the triplet of Zanu-Ven and obinutuzumab, which I'm also, you know, enthusiastic about it, showed very good rates of MRD negativity and used MRD-directed discontinuation of therapy, where it's not a fixed duration. It's kind of tailored based upon when the patient achieves MRD negativity. So overall, you know, a lot more options for patients. A lot of these newer agents are looking to be better tolerated, and hopefully just as efficacious, if not more efficacious, but we'll need more time to make a call on that.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Eli Lilly. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.